Hi, I'm Cynthia Davis. We live in a brave new world. You may not have questioned your parents, but science has made an indelible impact on our ability to understand our origins. Today on Homefront, we discuss the major breakthrough genetic testing is becoming for all of us.
I'm an American! Red, white, and blue. And I'm a citizen of this world and of heaven. Some things were meant to be together. I believe in faith and freedom. Got a country too. I believe with faith and freedom. We're gonna make it through.
Welcome to Homefront. I'm Cynthia Davis, your host, and I'm here to help. From parenting to public policies to political advice, join me in taking America back one family at a time. As a speaker, writer, former legislator, mother of seven, and wife of one for over 30 years, I bring you my experience.
Don't lose your freedom.
And now it's time for Homefront.
Don't lose your freedom. Let's talk about it.
Welcome to Homefront. I'm Cynthia Davis, and we have a very special guest. With the advent of the information age, we now have the ability to acquire more facts than ever before. Today, our special guest is Cece Moore, who is an independent professional genetic genealogist currently working on two different TV shows. One is called Finding Your Roots, and the other is the Genealogy Roadshow. Cece is also the lead ancestry ambassador for 23andMe and has close working relationships with all the major genetic genealogy testing companies. So welcome, Cece.
Hi, I'm really happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, we're happy to have you here because I know that you say you're good at helping people understand. So this is where it begins. To start off with, most people in our audience are new to the idea of genetic genealogy. So I'd like you to back up and let us know, where did you begin getting interested in this, and what is genetic genealogy?
Genetic genealogy is when you use DNA testing in conjunction with traditional genealogy research. For most people, they're using it to extend their family tree beyond what we call a genealogical brick wall, where there's no records or they can't find the records to help them get beyond a certain point in their tree where they don't know the parents of, say, their great-grandparents. But it has proven to be extremely useful for those of unknown parentage, adoptees, donor-conceived individuals, foundlings, anyone who has unknown paternity for whatever reason. So I've really started using it almost more for that than I do for traditional genealogical research. And how did I get started? I was just a genealogy hobbyist, and I've always been interested in genetics. So when I read that they were using DNA testing for genealogy, I jumped in with both feet and learned everything I could as fast as I could and started writing a blog in 2010 that, surprisingly to me, became very popular and heavily read, and that made me take this more seriously than I think I would have otherwise. I never planned on it becoming a career, so it's one of those things that just sort of fell into my lap. And now, surprise, surprise, I'm working on two TV shows. Would never have guessed.
That's pretty exciting. So I want you to give us all the math behind this, but keep it simple because not everybody has studied advanced algebra. And but
you don't need advanced algebra, fortunately. You just need to understand the inheritance patterns of the different types of DNA. And it sounds complicated, but it's actually fairly simple. Now, it helps if you have visual aids, which we don't have right now. So someone may want to Google while I'm explaining this and look at some of the images online. So Y DNA is one type of DNA, and only males carry it. That is the DNA that's located on the Y chromosome that's passed from father to son. So that type of DNA follows the same inheritance pattern as surnames traditionally follow in Western society. Not all societies, but certainly a lot of the ones that Americans come from, Western Europe.
Okay.
So that's helpful for somebody who doesn't know who their father is, oftentimes, because surnames follow that same path as the Y chromosome inheritance. So often people who have matching Y chromosomes or the same DNA on their Y chromosome will share the same surname. And that's what's allowed us to have what's called surname projects. For instance, my father is a Moore, and there's a Moore surname project where they compare all of the Moores, the male Moores in the project, to see if their Y chromosomes match each other. And if they do, they can place them in family groups. And that means they share a common ancestor somewhere on both of their direct paternal lines. So that's their father's 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 line. And the Y chromosome changes fairly slowly, so that common ancestor could be quite a ways back in the tree. But the reason that helps for donor-conceived individuals or someone with unknown paternity, an adoptee, is because sometimes we can find these surname clusters in their DNA matches, which can give us a clue as to what their biological father's surname is. Now, it doesn't always work because your father may have also had a surname change at some point in his genealogy, an unrecorded adoption, or just a regular name change for whatever reason. So it doesn't work 100% of the time, but it works maybe 30 to 40% of the time is what Family Tree DNA has estimated. So that's the first type of DNA. That's an important one. Mitochondrial DNA is inherited from our mother's line. So our mother's 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 mother, we all get it, males and females, but only females pass it on. And that one changes very slowly. So the common ancestor for any of your matches, people who have the same mitochondrial DNA, could be hundreds or even thousands of years ago. So it's not the first one that I normally recommend for parentage type searches, although sometimes it can come in handy. My favorite type of DNA is called autosomal DNA. Autosomal DNA is the DNA that's on our 22 autosomal chromosomes. So we all have 23 pairs of chromosomes. 22 are autosomes, and then the 23rd is the sex chromosome, the Y chromosome that I talked about, or X chromosome. And there's pairs, so we get one set from mom and one set from dad. And this is DNA that we inherit from all of our ancestral lines. So you carry around little pieces of all of your great-grandparents in your autosomal DNA, sometimes big pieces. Autosomal DNA inheritance is random, meaning it's mixed up every generation, and you don't know which pieces you're going to get from mom and which from dad. So even full siblings only share about 50% of their autosomal DNA because they get a different mix from mom and a different mix from dad. And autosomal DNA testing for genealogy started in about 2009, at the end of 2009. And that's the one that we're having a ton of success with for unknown parentage searches. So that's the first one I start with, although for males, I love to have them do the Y DNA test as well, because then we can use those in conjunction with each other.
Oh, for goodness sake. So
so it's a lot to take in. There's a lot of articles out there. For someone who's interested in this, they should just Google and read more about it. I actually wrote a series back in 2012 for Jenny.com that was real basic, talked about the different types of DNA like I just did now. There's more resources beyond me trying to explain this to you now.
That's good. So in one of the episodes of Finding Your Roots, which is on PBS, the subject said she never would have known about her fifth grade grandfather because nobody ever talked about it. Certainly the paper and printed materials are already scarce, and when you go back further, there may have been newspaper articles that just turned to dust or vanished into obscurity. So how can the DNA help us tell the stories we will never be able to read, or maybe stories that were never written down?
there's a few different things that DNA can do for you. And the first is to confirm your paper trail research. So, and on my mom's side, her father is a proctor, and I have a paper trail going back to Jamestown, John Proctor, who was one of the first settlers of Jamestown. But you never know if there's been a break in your line somewhere where somebody is not the father on paper that they are in reality. And so, or if there's been a mistake or anything like that. So the nice thing is in the Proctor Surname Project, we've tested a lot of males who carry that surname. A number of them match each other, and most all of those people have paper trails back to the Proctors in Jamestown. So that is an example of where a paper trail has been confirmed, which is really nice when you've done a lot of research to be able to see that you were correct. And then sometimes it refutes the paper trail. So some people who have a paper trail back to the Proctors in Jamestown have taken a Y-DNA test, and they don't match the others who are descended from John Proctor. So we know that something in that line, there was a break. Somebody is not the son of who they're supposed to be on paper. And we see that, you know, fairly often it happens. And so then when you do that, the next thing DNA can do is it can open new avenues of discovery, meaning it can tell you, well, wait a second, you need to look elsewhere than the paper trail here. The documents aren't telling you the full story. And oftentimes when that happens, we are able to identify where that break happened. Not always, but often we can, by looking for somebody of that surname who was living at the right place at the right time, the surname that they're matching, that their Y chromosome is matching, not the surname that they carry, then we can sometimes tell stories that way, like it's the next door neighbor, for instance. So you know something happened back there with one of your great-great-great-grandmothers, which is a story that would never have been told. Now, that's especially true when we are looking at areas and times where there is no paper trail research or situations where there aren't, like unknown parentage. There's just no way to get these answers other than DNA. And we do it a lot in finding your roots. For instance, with Ben Jealous's mitochondrial DNA, we were able to see that he carried some mutations that are only found in Madagascar. And so that tells us that on his direct maternal line, his mother's 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 line, who were enslaved people, that they descended from somebody from Madagascar. And the historical records tell us that 17 slave ships came from Madagascar. So that's something that we would never have found in the records, that Ben Jealous's great-great-great-great-grandmother was a slave on a ship that came from Madagascar. But by testing his mtDNA, his mitochondrial DNA, we're able to add that rich story to his family history. Even if we don't know her name, exactly who it was, we know that she must have been on one of those ships. And that's very often true for adoptees, for instance, or foundlings. Say, let's use the most extreme example, a foundling, someone who was found on a doorstep or horribly sometimes in a trash can, in a lot of instances of a newborn. There's no way to know their family stories because there's no records. Even if you could convince a court to open their records, there's nothing there that tells who their parents were. And we've been able to identify the birth families in a number of those situations now. So those are stories that, you know, wouldn't have been told that are now known to the individuals involved.
I remember when my husband told me that his father was part Cherokee Indian. And a lot of people in America think they're part Cherokee.
That's right. That's got to be one of the most common oral histories.
So we went to Oklahoma, and I got to talk to his father's grandfather's. The grandfather in the family was Carl Davis. And when I got to visit with him directly, it appears that the Cherokee Indian married his great-great-grandfather, but it was after the birth of the direct descendant.
Mm-hmm. Well, hey, at least there was one in the tree. A lot of times there isn't one anywhere in the tree. We don't know where those stories came from. So in that case, it You know, there was one, just not his bloodline.
Right.
I have another example I should have mentioned. Okay, this is a great example of how DNA can tell stories that you wouldn't have otherwise known. My brother-in-law tested, because I've tested so much in my family, and he thought it sounded interesting, and he thought that he was Native American. Your story reminded me of this. That's all he knew about his family history. So he wanted to see how much Native American he got in the test when his DNA was tested. And instead, he ended up with 6.6% African DNA, and he had 0% Native American or Asian DNA. So that was really interesting, because he had no idea about that. That wasn't something that had been discussed in his family or passed down. Now, that inspired me to turn to the paper trail research, which I had never done for him, just never thought to do it. And I was able to find a very direct paper trail back to Madison Hemmings. Who's Madison Hemmings? Madison Hemmings is the son of Thomas Jefferson and Sally Hemmings. So my brother-in-law, who had no idea about his family history, is the fourth great-grandson of Thomas Jefferson and Sally Hemmings. So he has this incredible connection to history that he was never aware of. And my three nieces, who are his daughters, had no idea of. So this story had been hidden or lost in the generation since. And now they've regained this because of DNA testing. Now, they could have found it with the paper trail, but nobody ever looked. And so what inspired us to look were his DNA results. But sometimes it happens.
Mm-hmm. Going back to Adam and Eve, and even Noah and his wife, there are people who believe that we are all one race. We are all the human race. So how much of a difference does it make when you're finding different ethnicities? What are the markers you're looking for?
Well, I'm not analyzing it myself. The companies do that for us, fortunately. And the way they do that is they collect DNA from all over the world, and they try to find groups of people who have had their ancestors living in one place for hundreds or thousands of years. And when people are isolated and are not migrating and just marrying within the group that they're living around, they develop unique DNA signatures or unique mutations that we only find in certain parts of the world. Now, there's lots of DNA that we all share. You know, the vast majority of what we all have is exactly the same. So these are minute differences in just very specific areas of our genome. So for the most part, we're all almost exactly the same. But you can find these unique mutations that identify very specific regions. For instance, the mitochondrial DNA that I mentioned, Vangelis, that traces back to Madagascar. There's two unique mutations that aren't found anywhere else in the world that he carries in his genome. So we know that that has to trace back there. But a lot of people have said to me that they're concerned that this will cause more distinction between people, because we're looking at what their genome is telling us about their ancestral history. But fortunately, what I have found is that it really blurs the lines between quote-unquote ethnicities or races, because so many people, like my brother-in-law, are finding out that their ancestral background is much, much more diverse than they ever imagined. And because so many of us have these diverse regions showing up on our DNA, I think it brings us together more, because we realize that we're much more alike than we had ever imagined. So fortunately, I have not seen the opposite. In the few tiny experiences I have seen where, for instance, a neo-Nazi skinhead tests because he wants to prove that he's pure, in most cases, they'll find out that there's no such thing as pure. But if they come and they start spewing that type of, way of thinking on the forums where people discuss this type of thing, they're run out of town very quickly, because that's not tolerated in our community whatsoever. Everyone I know that is heavily invested in genetic genealogy is very much of the mind that we are all very, closely interconnected.
Very nice. So, speaking of bringing people together, There are three different databases you discuss on your website. There's 23andMe, there's the Family Tree DNA, and there's one called Ancestry DNA. Have any of these organizations considered merging their information so that they can produce more matches?
Well, these are all proprietary commercial companies. So I don't think that there is any intention at this point to merge those databases. And I hear this question a lot. We would all love it if they would do such a thing, but they're in competition with each other. And to a certain degree, they have different goals. 23andMe, although we use it for genealogy, was really founded for health purposes. And the FDA has stopped them from giving any type of health results anymore, so they're only giving ancestry results. But their goal remains revolutionizing healthcare.
Okay, can you back up 1 minute?
Sure.
You said that, now we do talk a lot about public policy on this show, so I can't let you get away with saying that a governmental entity is stopping a private proprietary organization from giving out information. Where does that come from?
Yeah, that's exactly right. So 23andMe, since I think it was 2006, were offering tests where people could, you know, spit in a tube, send it back, and they would get a report that told them which medical conditions they were at higher risk for or lower risk for based on their genetics. Now, some of those were very high confidence reports, meaning there was a lot of research to back it up, and some of them were less confident, where there was just a couple of research articles on that or studies that would back up those. But they would let us know that. So you could tell on the site, you'd get your result, and it would say, okay, you're higher risk for diabetes 2, and there's this many studies that support that. And so I felt that it was pretty clear, but the FDA was worried that, one, some of the information might not be correct, and two, that it would cause people to jump to conclusions and take too much control of their own health care. Meaning, this is actually in the letter that was sent to Family Tree, to 23andMe. Sorry, let me repeat that. In the letter that was sent to 23andMe from the FDA, warning them that they had to stop supplying these reports, it said that women who were at high risk for breast cancer, if it showed they had the BRCA gene or some other risk factor, might go and have a mastectomy or might, you know, cut off their own breasts, which is so ridiculous because you obviously could never take that kind of action without a doctor. And they feel that it's dangerous for this type of information to be delivered directly to the consumer or the quote-unquote patient, as they called us. Now, Ann Wojcicki, who founded 23andMe, has a completely different viewpoint. She thinks we all need to take control of our own health care and educate ourselves and make educated decisions on our choices. And I fully support that and was extremely disappointed when the FDA stepped in and ordered them to stop marketing these reports. November of 2013, they had to stop offering that. And so they, at this point, are just offering ancestry genealogy-related reports, but they're working with the FDA to try to get clearance to offer their reports again. And they just launched a service in Canada where they are offering the reports. So it's just in the United States where you can't get them.
So then you were going to tell us about the Family Tree DNA and how that differs from Ancestry DNA.
So Family Tree DNA was the first commercial genetic genealogy company in the United States. And they were actually launched the same week as another company in the UK. So they're one of the first in the world. And they were founded by a genealogist, which is Bennett Greenspan, with the sole purpose of helping us further our family tree research. And so their focus has always been on genealogy. They've always worked very closely with the citizen scientist community, which in fact, they really started this whole thing by offering to let volunteers become administrators for these surname projects that I mentioned earlier with YDNA. And that's how it started. A lot of people thought this was really interesting. A lot of genealogists, some retired scientists, people like that took great interest in it. And that's what started the whole field of genetic genealogy. So Family Tree DNA has a very focused vision on genealogy, and they've worked very closely with all of us in the community to push it forward. If it wasn't for them, I don't think that we would have what we have now. I don't think this would be such a burgeoning field. 23andMe, they were the ones who introduced autosomal DNA for genealogy, so they also, we have a lot to thank them for, because prior to that, Family Tree DNA was just doing the YDNA testing and the mitochondrial DNA testing. And after 23andMe started doing the autosomal DNA, Family Tree DNA quickly jumped on the bandwagon. Now, Ancestry DNA is more of a latecomer. They did have some YDNA and mtDNA tests in the past, although they're not offering those anymore. But in 2012, they launched their own autosomal DNA service, and that is Ancestry DNA, which is a subdivision of Ancestry.com. So I think most people know Ancestry.com. They're the ones that have the billions of records that we use to build our family tree through the paper trail research. So they are also totally focused on genealogy. They come at it from a little bit different angle in that their main part of their company is the record research and family tree building. And so they've really worked hard to integrate the DNA testing directly into the paper research. So when you test there, if you have a family tree on their site, you can connect that directly to your DNA. And so they try to, their interface takes both of those things in conjunction with each other to help you further your family tree. And because they have so many resources, they've been able to accomplish a lot in the relatively short time that they've been doing this. And their database is growing very, very fast. They were just quoted as saying they're selling between 30,000 and 50,000 kits every month. They are still saying they have 500,000 in their database officially, but I think they're much closer to 700,000, which is 23andMe has 750,000 in their database. So they've been the largest, but I think pretty soon Ancestry DNA will surpass them. They're all different. Ancestry DNA is also much more corporate, obviously. They're part of Ancestry.com, and Family Tree DNA, although it's grown a lot, still feels like a family business. You know, you still can talk to the CEO pretty easily, and it's just a different feel. But all three companies have strengths and weaknesses, and there are certainly benefits to testing with all of them.
So if somebody were very serious about wanting to find that information, maybe that person would get the testing done with all three organizations just to get it into the database.
That's absolutely right. That's always what I recommend, especially for somebody who is doing an unknown parentage type search. They absolutely have to be in all three databases. We call it fishing in three ponds, and that's because different people have tested at different companies. Now, there's some of us who've tested at all of them, but for the most part, these are unique databases, and that key match that helps you solve your search or helps you get past that brick wall on your family tree could be sitting in one of the databases that you haven't tested in. And now we're really lucky that the prices have come down. It used to be very expensive, but now you can be in all three databases for well under $300, which is pretty amazing.
I spent 8 years in the Missouri State Legislature, and when I was first elected, I remember going on the freshman orientation tour, and we were told as the newly elected officials that the state of Missouri is way behind on its rape testing kits because they were spending $2,400 to retrieve DNA information. Now, this is going back 12 years, but the complaint was the state budget didn't have $2,400 to spend on getting DNA information. Nevertheless, we have an interesting situation now. Thankfully, the price has come down. And what has made the price come down? I know the price on pregnancy tests have come down. Those used to be $15, and now you can buy it at the dollar store for a dollar. What's making the DNA testing less expensive?
It's mostly the advances in the technology. I mean, just like all high-end technology, it's advancing so fast, and what we can do now is just amazing. Wouldn't have been imagined to what we could do a decade ago. So that's the biggest part of it. But then there's also competition. You know, there's a lot of DNA testing companies out there. There's really only the three plus National Geographic that we use for genealogy type purposes. But for pregnancy testing and forensic type testing, there's lots and lots of companies out there that are competing with each other and driving the prices down.
A few years ago, as a state legislator, I was invited to go to the National Council of State Legislatures conference in Boston. They took us to a very nice lunch at my favorite restaurant, Pier 4, and we had a wonderful lunch and then a presentation on why government should do mandatory DNA testing that will go into a vast database whenever anyone is arrested. That seemed like too much Big Brother, but what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, it's not really my area of focus, but I certainly have thought about it because of what I do, and I am of two minds. In one way, it would be wonderful to be able to solve a lot of these cold cases and for people to be on record. So when something happens, we're able to quickly catch the perpetrator. But, you know, it's always a balance on privacy, you know, personal rights and that. So, you know, I'm torn. I would love it if we were all DNA tested in a way, because no one would really be able to do anything wrong. Maybe it would cut down a lot on these crimes that we see. But on the other hand, everyone has their own right. And it's, you know, even in what I do, it's difficult because sometimes there's one person that we need to test to answer a very pressing question, whether it be just a genealogical research question or an unknown parentage question. And that person doesn't want to test, and that's their right. And we can't do anything about that. So, you know, for me, I would love to see everybody tested, but I also really understand and respect and support people's right to choose not to. And I think as the databases grow, it won't matter so much if one individual tests or not, because we'll have a very good genetic family tree, meaning we'll know where people fit into the family tree, even if they aren't tested. So unfortunately for those people who don't want to test, we'll still be able to learn quite a bit about their genetics from other people who've tested that they're related to. So I think it's getting to the point where there'll be less and less, quote unquote, genetic privacy in the future. It's already that way, and that I can often identify a birth parent without them testing, you know, just from other people that have tested that they're related to. So I think that people that are really uncomfortable with that are probably going to be forced to, you know, make some adjustments, because that's the direction that we're going, good or bad.
Well, it saves us the time of having to microchip people, because your body is your microchip.
That's right. That's right. What do you think about that?
Well, I filed a bill when I was in the legislature that caused a huge amount of controversy. I know you're from California, where you have people way to the left end of the spectrum, but I'm from Missouri, where the majority of the people are pro-life. And I filed a bill that said, in the cases where an abortion is being performed on a minor child, we're talking about somebody under 18, or unemancipated, we need to retain DNA information from the aborted fetus for the purpose of identifying who the perpetrator was. People who like abortion didn't like the idea that we would retain that information, but in cases where there could be rape or incest, and I say rape because there would be a statutory rape provision, meaning whether it's consensual or not, the state said that was wrong. And out of protection for those young ladies who may not have wanted to come forward at the time with the problem and may later. We are destroying the evidence. The blood cries out of who the dad is from those aborted babies. I wanted a record so we could trace who is this dad who did this to this young lady. That's what I wanted. Now, it is cutting edge, but you're not afraid of cutting edge.
Yeah, it
edge.
Is. I was going to say, that's pretty advanced. How long ago did you do that?
The baby has its own DNA. That's what makes it special, that we already can find out certain things. I've been out of office for 4 years, but it got me some coverage on some TV stations and made everybody all upset, which is very fun.
I'll bet. So I guess you were not successful with getting that through.
No, we didn't get it passed, but I think it raises the question. We need some awareness that everybody has their own unique DNA, and their DNA does tell the story of who the mom is and who the dad is. It's just a matter of figuring it out. So occasionally we do have elected officials who listen to our show. So if you were in a state legislature and had the opportunity to pass any law you wanted, what would you recommend for public policy enhancements that would make the world a better place?
Well, it would sure be nice if we didn't have to jump through the hoops we do for adoptees to learn their genetic heritage. I would open all of the original birth certificates to adult adoptees. They're adults. They shouldn't be treated like children. They have the right to the information about their genetic heritage. As a genealogist, I feel very strongly that everyone should have equal rights when it comes to knowing about their ancestors and researching their family tree. So I think that for me, although that's not directly related to genetic genealogy, that would be one of the most important things that I could possibly accomplish if I were in a position to do something about it. We spend hundreds and thousands of hours on searches for adoptees and people of unknown parentage who need to know for medical reasons, among others. There's plenty of adoptees who have children, way too many adoptees who have children that have genetic disorders that the doctors need family history for, and they're unable to get that. More and more states are opening up the records, which is wonderful, but there's still a long ways to go. So we still have tens of thousands of adoptees who are flocking to DNA testing to try to get the answers. And there are many of us who do what's called search angel work, where we help these people pro bono. I have less time to do it than I used to because of my consulting work with the television shows, but I do still work on some cases, and there's a whole network of people who work on them. And we love doing it, but we would love it even more if we didn't have to do it. Also, with donor-conceived individuals, I feel very strongly that that should not be anonymous anymore. That was a mistake that was done in the past, and we can't go back and fix it at this point. But I think going forward, that's something that should be outlawed, just like it has been in some countries in Europe.
In what countries has anonymous donor conception been outlawed?
You know, I don't know specifically all of them, but I think Sweden is one of them. Sweden is very forward-thinking, and I believe that they have said that that is not the correct way to do things. So if someone wants to be a donor, then they have to agree that they could be identified at some point. And I know that some countries have required that they provide family medical history, you know, from the very beginning.
Very good.
But I don't think they're identified until later, because I spend so much time trying to help people who are here learn about their biological family and their genetics. But I have heard that, and I think that that is the direction that we need to be moving.
Great. So if people want to become more informed, they can go to the website called
Your Genetic Genealogist. I used to write very, very regularly. I don't get to as much now because of my media consulting. And it's hard because I love writing on the blog. But at the same time, I felt that being part of these television shows was really important because it's helping to raise public awareness on what DNA testing can accomplish. And I want millions and millions of people to take these tests. One, for what they can learn about themselves, but two, for how it helps the rest of us learn about our families. And at this point, we have about, in the autosomal DNA databases, there's over a million people, probably 1.5 million or so. And then there's also the Y DNA databases and the mitochondrial DNA databases. I think Family Tree DNA has processed a million tests. So we're getting there. And I think Spencer Wells has predicted that we'll see the 2 millionth test very soon, and I agree with him. And so it's gaining steam. Before long, we will have millions and millions of people tested, and I want to be one of the people that encourages the general populace to educate themselves about what they can learn from DNA testing.
Okay, so you're saying that if I wanted to give you my DNA, that would help you get a bigger picture that might help other people who've been adopted?
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah, now every day we're seeing an adoptee solve their search, which is often decades old. There are many, many adoptees who've been searching for decades for their birth family, and they DNA test, and some of them immediately get the answer because they have a close enough match in the database that they're able to figure out who their birth family is. And others, it can take months or years. I first started developing this methodology with a group of search angels back in 2011, 2012. And at that point, we weren't seeing a lot of these cases being solved, but now we're seeing them every day. So the hard work that we all did back then has really paid off. And I always knew it would. It was, you know, difficult waiting at first, but of that core group of people who were first working on it, a lot of them were adoptees, and they almost all solved their searches now. So it has a lot of promise, and the more people that test, the better it's going to get. There still are some people who don't have close enough matches to be able to solve their search, or key matches. Sometimes they don't have to be close, but they have to be key. It's like detective work. You know, we piece things together, and sometimes even a more distant match can help us get to the answer. But there are people who are still waiting, especially people who come from more recent immigrant families, like, for instance, Italians who came in the last couple generations. That's difficult. Jewish people with Ashkenazi Jewish ancestry, it's difficult as well. They come from a smaller gene pool, so they tend to match every other Ashkenazi Jewish person in the database. They all share little pieces of DNA, but it's often not enough to determine their close biological family. So, yeah, we're just waiting for the databases to grow so the rest of these people that are still searching can have their answers. And every person that tests, there's a potential that they'll help somebody else solve the key mystery of their life.
Well, you've been a blessing and a delight. I am so excited you could give us a few minutes out of your busy day today. Thank you, Cece, and God bless you.
Oh, thank you very much. I really appreciated being on the show. Let me say one more thing, though.
Yes.
As I'm encouraging people to test, I do, because of my experience, I now always warn people that if they test, they may get unexpected surprises. So people who are adventurous and want to learn new things should definitely test. Those who think that they might be upset if they learn something about their family they weren't expecting maybe need to think a little bit harder before they decide to test. And you're never going to find someone who is a bigger proponent of testing than me. But a lot of people have found unknown half-siblings and close family members, and a lot of people have learned that they are not the biological child of their social father, the one that raised them. And so I do like to warn people that if learning one of those types of things would be upsetting to them, then they do need to really think this through before they test, because a lot of people think, oh, it won't happen to me, and it does. So as much as I do want to encourage it, on the other hand, I also want to be responsible when I encourage people to test.
What about someone like me who comes from a stable family and there really were no big surprises in my background? Do you think that would still make a great Christmas present this year?
I do. I think it would make a terrific Christmas present. Now, you might not find something out about your immediate family, but you could find something very interesting about your more distant relatives or ancestors. And, you know, more and more people do. It used to be when we tested, a lot of us didn't have really exciting results. But with the greater databases and with the technology advancing, more and more people find out really interesting things. So, yeah.
Okay.
Get it for Christmas. Go for it.
Thank you, Cece. It's been a pleasure having you on the show today.
Oh, thank you so much. It's my pleasure.
This has been another edition of Homefront. I'm Cynthia Davis, and I thank you for joining us. We're taking America back one family at a time. I sincerely hope you heard something that left you feeling inspired, motivated, and ready to engage our culture. If you enjoyed our show, you can find more at cynthiadavis.net. You can also find me on Facebook at Homefront with Cynthia Davis. Have a great week and make sure you come back next time for another edition of Homefront.